Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First up, I'm going to be chatting with missionary John Rehm, who'll be telling us about some of the issues surrounding poverty and disability. So tell me a little bit about how your missionary work has allowed you to see some of the issues of poverty and disability.
I guess coming to Africa, and coming to Nigeria in particular, immediately we were faced with multitudes of people with physical disabilities who were basically on the street begging. So it was hard to go anywhere and not be faced with issues of people with disabilities, whether it be missing limbs or withered limbs or blindness, now the one missing part, I guess, is mental health issues or disabilities with mental health issues weren't as evident. You would see some people, it was clear that they weren't the beggars. They were just kind of wandering, and the way they were carrying themselves, you could tell there were mental health issues. But most of the people with intellectual challenges or have brain damage or dysfunction, learning challenges, or communication challenges, they really are not visible. And I know they exist. I know those people exist, and I have met some. They're not as visible as, say, the physical disabilities are the most visible.
So, in terms of the access to health care that these people would have over there, how does it differ from what they would get here in Canada?
Oh, day and night. Over here there's essentially no government health care. There should be, but there's not, so everyone has to pay for services, and so consequently the poor don't really have access to health care at all. Most of these people with disabilities I would say the majority of people with disabilities that are out begging would be homeless. Now, again, there's no government program even for taking care of people that have disabilities that can't earn a living and are homeless. The only saving grace, I suppose, is that it's warm, and if you can find a place under a tree or in the shadow of a building or under a bridge or something, you won't die, right? There's no risk of dying from exposure.
So, in your missionary work, have you seen any response to these needs? Anyone who's provided something that would help these citizens?
Yes, well, if I can back up. One, there's a whole industry built around baking. So, and that, I think, flows from Islam, where one of the pillars of Islam is giving alms to the poor. So there's a whole segment of society of people with disabilities that's their livelihood, that's what they do. And so they generate enough to survive just from begging on the street. Then you have, I have a friend who had a son who was autistic, and she was in UK, and when she was in UK, she had lots of help for her son that was autistic. When he got back to Nigeria, she realized how there was really nothing offered for anyone who had a child with that kind of issue. Or people who had children and didn't want the children begging on the street. So she created what's called the Children's Development Center, where parents can bring their children and they get access to physiotherapy, occupational therapy. But essentially the Children's Development Center philosophy is to encourage the parents to keep the kids with them at home and to not kick them out. Because one of the challenges in Africa is people with these, in traditional African thinking, people with these kind of disabilities, they would attribute that to evil spirits. So there must be something bad in that person. So most of these people are outcasts of their family. So the families, even if the families do keep the children in the home, they tend to hide them. They aren't so, the children really aren't as visible as children that don't have the challenges. But the Children's Development Center is trying to undo that and encourage people to keep their kids, and basically offering some help so that their kids can function and have a life that makes a contribution to the world or to society. But those are private non-governmental organizations. There's nothing, there's no government programs that I'm aware of. And from talking to my friend who started that development center, there is nothing.
So if you could send any one message about the need for inclusion in all countries throughout the world, what would you say?
Well, every human being is of value. Every human being, I believe, is created in the image of God and has inherent value. Whatever they have, it's not that the person can't have some contribution to society and has the right to thrive to the extent that they can thrive. So, in places where there's a struggle for survival and where there's such poverty, that isn't high on the priorities of most people. Most people are just where there's poverty and a struggle for survival, individuals with challenges become very low on the priority, you know, on their list of priorities or on the priorities of society. Like in Africa, the government and are just struggling to survive and struggling to deal with so many other issues that, you know, we have to be thankful for Canada and other countries that are, you know, developed to the point that they can put a lot of focus and put energy on helping these individuals and making sure these individuals are included and become, you know, productive and included members of the society at large. But I have to say, in Africa, I can't see that happening anytime soon. There's so many other problems that Africa is struggling with, and it's sad that people with disabilities are neglected. But I can't see that changing, other than private organizations.
I'd like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Just amazing that someone would take it upon herself, middle of those circumstances of poverty and difficulty, to create something for the disabled community in Africa, giving an opportunity where one wasn't readily available before, taking a chance, saying, I'm going to be that voice for people with disabilities. I'm going to be that someone who gives them a meaningful future. It's just incredible, folks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadians are being bought and sold. We can no longer ignore this reality. Each of the 27 million human trafficking victims around the globe has a unique story. 80% of victims are women, 50% are children. This is not only a global injustice, but a local reality. It is happening right now in my community. We are asking you to take action today. Visit endexploitation.com. Get informed and take action. British anti-slavery leader William Wilberforce once said, "Having heard all this, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never say again that you did not know. Only question now is, what will you do?" Join us and help eliminate human slavery in Canada.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from missionary John Rehm. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Kerry Wright, who will be sharing his insights on Freedom's Wings. So tell me a little bit about what flying means to you.
Flying means to me, it's total freedom. I'm quadriplegic, and I'm confined to an electric wheelchair, so most of my life, of course, is spent quite confined. When they put me in a cockpit of a glider, it's total freedom. You get to leave your wheelchair behind. You don't even think about disability issues. All of a sudden, you're a pilot like everybody else. You've got one joystick, and, you know, you are looking for lift. You're looking at controlling an airplane. You're a mile high above everybody else in the world. And people in the ground, when they look up, they can't tell if it's a person with a disability flying the thing. You know, it flies just the same for everybody, and it takes very little real strength to fly the thing. So for me, it's total freedom. It's a total escape. And when I come back down and get, you know, and I'm back in my wheelchair, I'm just grinning from ear to ear for weeks afterwards.
So how did you get involved with flying?
I got involved when I was a teenager. My brother took a free flight at a flight school and told me about it and said, "You've got to try this." So I went and got my free flight, and that sort of ended my college dreams. I went off and took flying lessons.
So are there any challenges being a pilot with a disability?
Oh, for sure, yeah. Like, I'm a quadriplegic, so I have very limited arm strength. So I'll never get a license. But with gliding, that doesn't matter. You've got volunteer instructors that are always willing to go with you. So one of them just rides in the back, and as soon as you get up, and for me, as soon as we're released from the tow plane, I take over and do all the flying from then on. And it really takes very little strength for that.
So in your time as a glide pilot, what's been the greatest success moment that you've had?
I think it was last year. In the spring, there's lots of lift. And I got to go up and climb to our limit is 12,500 feet. And I got to go up there and spend, a couple hours, near that altitude. We stayed at our limit as long as we could and cover several hundred kilometers. And for me, it was the first time that I had ventured that far from our home airport and went to several other airports. And it was just a lot of fun to experience that.
So recently there was a letter that you had written referenced on the air. What inspired you to write that?
One of my friends at the Lethbridge Soaring Club, that two of the members of their club were the people in that letter that I wrote about, with where we had two gliders circling. And they've become good friends of mine. And they were trying to secure some funding for Freedom's Wings for their club and asked me if I would write a letter. And I immediately responded, of course I would. They were so instrumental in helping me to experience flying.
So how does the community respond knowing that pilots with disabilities can achieve such monumental things?
I think it's really good. The community opens their eyes a little bit, and they can see, that us folks that have to deal with disabilities, there's still a lot of really neat things we can do, a lot of ordinary things that even able-bodied people can't or aren't willing to try.
So if you could send any one message to the disabled community about the need for this freedom that you describe, what would you say?
I would say give it a try. There's all kinds of gliding clubs that are willing to help you to do this. I've found these people because I think maybe because they are volunteer people, maybe they're just good people. I don't know, but they just went really out of their way to help me to experience this. And I found that at the Calgary Club first, and then the Edmonton Soaring Club, and now the Lethbridge Soaring Club, and all three have been so helpful, along with the York Soaring in Ontario. It seems every club that I talk to will go out of their way to help me, and it's really neat. You get to hang out with really good pilots and become their friends.
So what are the next steps for your flying?
I'm just going to experience more areas to fly. I'm going to try some mountain flying. And just get together with these folks as much as I can. It's just so much fun to hang out with them, and you get to play with really, really neat stuff, and they make you feel at home.
So is there any modified equipment that they use to set up the plane for you?
The aircraft, they do have hand controls for the rudder, and other than that, gliders are already set up pretty good. There's just a joystick between your knee, and really that's all you need to operate. And it's very, very easy to move. There's very little strength involved. And you have an instructor in the back seat that just will take over if you need it, and if not, they'll let you go.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from yoga instructor Nicole Danio. She'll be sharing a little bit about the latest happenings with her yoga program. So what's the latest program?
Thanks, Cam, and Happy New Year.
And to you.
The latest is that things keep progressing along in terms of all my classes. I'm very pleased to continue to be invited by different associations. For example, Community Living has me come every so often to their group of classes at St. Mike's to share with them how yoga can be modified and made totally accessible. And of course, my classes at Harmony in Action. I'm sitting in the parking lot here right now at Harmony in Action, just finished our first class of the new year. And also my classes for the girls and women with Down syndrome on Saturday morning. So those classes that have been going now for, they're all in their fourth year. They continue to build, and I hope people feel very comfortable to come and check out any of those classes on a walk-in basis, or they can commit to, you know, a series of classes. But I really wanted to let people know that the classes that I teach at the University of Windsor, which I've been teaching for 8 or 9 years now, to all kinds of different levels of people, you know, people who are maybe athletes, on the track team, on the football team, faculty, staff, they're all welcome. And the university has known about my teaching skills. They know that I can modify my classes to be more accessible to everybody. And they've asked me to really encourage all students and faculty and staff, and of course, community members. You don't have to be part of the university to come to those classes. But to let people know that their campus rec programs are really accessible. The whole facility there at the St. Denis Center is accessible. And if anybody is curious to try yoga, maybe they've thought perhaps they wouldn't be able to do a yoga class, maybe because they're in a wheelchair or don't have full range of motion in their body. But that is a focus of mine for the last 4 years, and I'd really love to welcome and invite anybody to come and try those classes out. I'm at the university 4 days a week for noon hour classes, and if anybody would like to try to come to those classes, especially, you know, the first week is always free, and I welcome them to do that, and for them to know that yoga is accessible and easily modified, and they would get so much out of it. So I would really love the students and staff and community to know that and to come and try it out. That would be wonderful to see them. There's all levels going on in my classes. So that would be great for people to know about and to try out.
So when you mention these programs can be easily modified, can you describe how you might modify a program for a person with a disability?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, a main focus for my yoga class is deeper, stronger, more controlled breathing and the meditative aspect. So everybody can sit or lay down, recline back in their chair perhaps, and work on the different breathing exercises. We do a lot of that in my classes to increase the oxygen in the body and to bring more and more energy into areas of the body that might be dull or lethargic, and gain body consciousness. I know myself with having scoliosis, I didn't have a real consciousness of the left side of my body until I really began doing yoga. The left side always seemed to just be kind of going along for the ride. So yoga has helped me to bring energy and awareness to the left side of my body, and I've become much more ambidextrous in my movements and even in my everyday tasks, like using a computer. You know, I use the computer mouse under my left hand now. I brush my teeth with my left hand and have tried to energize that part of my body that used to just really be very dull. So definitely with the breathing and focus and meditation, everybody can do that. And in terms of the actual asanas, the physical practices, I teach so many classes where people might be, you know, in their wheelchair or have different mobility issues. And I give all kinds of variations that they can do seated in their chair or in any of the chairs that are available in the room, against the wall, with different props, mats, and things like that. And we work with what range of motion you've got, and we try to just encourage maybe a little extra millimeter here and there in, for example, an extension of a leg or a flex of a foot that might perhaps have been very restricted. We just slowly start to encourage more and more oxygen and breath toward that limb and get it moving maybe in a bigger range than it used to have. All poses for the spine can be done in a chair. I've taught lots and lots of classes where I may be working with groups who are elderly or in their wheelchair, and we modify it. So instead of standing and doing a big triangle pose, we sit and we curve our spine as far over as we can. We use our hand on the armrest there to lean over and get as much extension on one side of the body and the other. Same as twists. We hold on to the back of the chair and use that to twist around and look past our shoulder. And the movements don't have to be big and elaborate and fancy and out of a yoga journal magazine. We're not striving for any kind of crazy, big, fancy asanas. We're just trying to encourage movements in the spine that will help it to feel better, to get stronger and to alleviate pain. So gentle curves, gentle twists, gentle back bends and forward bends. And I also keep my eye on spines. For example, I have one student with a very deep lordosis in her lower back. So she doesn't need to do big cobras and back bends. We avoid those. And she's encouraged to do more forward bends. So no matter who's in my class, I'm noticing their alignment. I'm noticing their postural pattern. I'm trying to give them suggestions as to, okay, you're very good at that pose. You might need not to focus on that pose so much. Your body's already very strong there. However, you've got, a little bit of weakness here, or I see some lack of mobility here. So let's focus on these areas. So I might have one person at one end of the class doing something very different than somebody at the other end of the class. But in general, they're doing the same movement. They're doing the same idea of curves and twists and back and forward bends, but just in a slightly different manner. And I think it's very inspiring for everybody to be in a group that's all inclusive, where we realize that yoga really is for everybody. So I really would love to see people come in and give it a try. And like I mentioned, the first week of class is always free. So just so people there on campus know that the week of January 18th is when all the campus rec classes start up. So if they'd like to come in and they have some time on their noon hour, I'm there at the St. Denis Center on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Fridays as well, noon till 1. So all of that information is on the golancers.ca website. Or they can always go to my website, which is www.cocoyoga.ca, and they can contact me directly if they've got any questions or concerns. You can bring a friend along with you. It would be great to try it out.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, and thank you as always, Cam.
Of course. I love hearing stories of individuals and expand their work to support more and more people with disabilities. Those are the ones who are leading the way for the future, who have a real passion for their work and create better and better opportunities. And I think all of today's guests exemplify this. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks, and we'll see you next week.